The National Rifle League 22 August match this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, the show that may come out on any day of the week. So we are here and we're going to give you a rundown of the National Rifle League 22 August Course of Fire. Now, those of you guys that have watched this for a while know I'm big into National Rifle League 22 competition because it is a competition that can take place on a 100-yard range. It has a budget class, so if you don't have a lot of money and you want to get into precision rifle competition, this is a great way to get into it. Additionally, clubs all across the country shoot the exact same course of fire, and then those points go into a national database, and then you get to compete for a spot at the nationals at the end of the season. So we're going to talk about the NRL 22 August match that was held this last week at Westside Sportsman's Club in Evansville, Indiana. That is the NRL 22 match that I most often compete in, although I understand a lot of you guys have sent me requests to come compete in your NRL 22 matches, and I may get around to that at some point later in the year, but as you can see, my schedule is pretty slammed this year, just trying to get Mail Call Mondays episodes out on time. So before we go into the actual match setup and the different stages, I'm going to talk about the rifle that I shot for this match. Now, we did talk about this a couple of Mondays ago, but I'm going to give you a quick rundown so you don't have to go page back and try to find the video. The first and most visible portion of this rifle is this is a Modular Driven Technologies Adjustable Core Competition Chassis, ACC chassis, and we are sponsored by Modular Driven Technologies, so they were kind enough to send out this chassis so that we could put it on our Tika T1X. Now, I do have a stock Tika barrel in here, the stock Tika trigger, but you'll notice back here we got some different things going on. This is a Sterk Shooting bolt handle, and I absolutely love this thing. It's just an amazing bolt handle. We also have a Sterk Shooting bolt shroud to replace the plastic shroud, this really nice aluminum piece here. And then we have a Sterk titanium knurled thread protector up here, because I try not to run the suppressor all the time on NRL 22 competitions. I like it, but sometimes it gets in the way, and with a heavy rig like this and a really light aluminum suppressor sticking out there, the possibility for damage to the suppressor is pretty considerable. So I generally will run the thread protector on here, and it's a great upgrade over the factory piece. So if you whack it against something, you don't have to worry about cracking the thread protector and damaging the threads. The pistol grip on this chassis is the standard pistol grip for the ACC chassis, although I could switch it out for pretty much any AR pistol grip that I wanted. The scope we're running on here is the Bushnell Forge, and it is a 4.5 to 27 power first focal plane rifle scope. I've been really, really impressed with this. It has a mil reticle in it, mil turrets, locking turrets. It does have a zero stop on it. A really nice overall scope, but it is well above base class price point. It's really in that same level as the Vortex Viper PST Gen 2 scopes. And then up here at the front, I've got a Warn Skyline Bipod. I went back and forth right before the match on if I was going to run the Warn or if I was going to run the MDT Skypod. What it really came down to was I was in a hurry to run out the door, grab the rifle. It already had the Warn on it, and I didn't switch over and grab the Skypod. So I shot the Warn for this match. I've shot it for a couple of training sessions now, so I have a good deal of information, so you guys will be getting a full review of that coming very soon. And then I used a couple of different rear bags that we'll talk about as we go through the stages, or a couple of support bags as we go through the stages. So that is the rifle overall. Now, the NRL 22 format is five stages. The stages are 10 rounds for each stage and 100 points possible for each stage. And the time limit on each stage is 120 seconds. So 2 minute time limit for each stage. How you start the stage and what you do during the stage is different from one to one, but those stay the same throughout all of them. So we're gonna start out with a very interesting stage that they had this time around. And it's interesting because I think there was a little bit of a trick going on, and I haven't gotten a chance to talk to any of the guys at NRL 22 to see if what I speculate occurred actually occurred. But the title of this stage is Rope-a-Dope. And the targets and ranges, at 50 yards, we had a 1.5 inch target on a single hanger. At 75 yards, we had a 2.5 inch on a single hanger. At 100 yards, we had a 3 inch on a single hanger. And the start position, there was a ladder that will be faced to shoot between the legs with a rope approximately 12 inches above the ground in position, mag-in, bolt back. So you had the ladder in front of you, you had a strap hung from it, and in the actual stage layout, they've got a picture of a ladder with what looks like a ratchet strap hung across it with the bottom of the ratchet strap about 12 inches from the ground. So you start in position, mag in, and bolt back. When you have kind of odd stages like this, that's a good safety check just to make sure that the shooter is in position with the mag in before the stage starts. You don't have to try to move into position and have the possibility of knocking the gun off, dropping the gun, or knocking things over. Additionally, I think that was the case on this because with a title like Rope-a-Dope, you figure there's some kind of trick. So the description of the stage is, shooter will engage the targets with two shots each in the following order, 50, 75, 100, 75, and 50. So you would engage those yard lines going out, and then you would come back in. Now you'll notice that nowhere in the start position or the description does it say that you actually have to start with the rifle on the rope. It doesn't say you have to shoot from the rope. It doesn't say anything about actually using the rope. It just says that the ladder is there and the rope is there. So I'm pretty sure with the title Rope-a-Dope that they meant it to be confusing and meant you to do a critical reading of the stage of fire. Now, I had originally planned on just kind of sitting back and watching and seeing how people figured this out, but too many people started to argue about one facet of the rules or another. So I finally pointed out that, hey, this is what it says. We couldn't find anything online in any of the groups that said that there was a specific ruling one way or the other. So I shot the stage prone, laying on the ground underneath the rope. There was no reason for me to try to actually balance the rifle on the rope since it didn't say that you had to balance the rifle on the rope. Most of us shot it that way at this match, although very interesting thing is our one young gun shooter for this match, she chose to actually shoot it on the rope and actually did very, very well on it. So that thoroughly surprised me. It cracked me up to see her do that. But so there really isn't any trick on this other than reading the directions and making sure you have a good idea of what's going on. Because if you just glanced over this and especially looked at the picture of the ladder with the rope on it, you would think that you need to actually shoot with a rifle suspended from the rope. But when you read the rules, it doesn't say you have to suspend the rifle from the rope. It doesn't actually say where the rifle will be anywhere. It just says where the rope's 12 inches above the ground. So that was kind of interesting. I don't know if that was the intent, but since everybody in our club pretty much shot it with that information in mind, then if that wasn't the intent, it still doesn't disrupt anything because our scores all lined out the same way on this stage. Now, I did have one problem. I had some cocking issues with the T1X, which is really strange because I have quite a few hundred rounds through this gun now. And the issue that I ran into is sometimes I would slam the bolt forward and the cocking piece would go to decocked. So the striker would actually follow the bolt close. And this is the same problem that I was having on my center fire rifle at the last local match. So it was really odd. So the gremlins climbed in and would decock my rifle when I slammed the bolt too hard. I never had negligent discharge. Never had an accidental discharge. It would just decock the rifle and I would start loading the trigger and realize I'm well past where the trigger should have broke. And I could come back, lift the handle, drop the handle again, recock the rifle and fire the shot. So again, jumped in there. I no idea why. I had a training day this morning with this rifle. It still did it a couple of times on that, so I pulled it out of the chassis, increased the pull weight a little bit, turned the pull weight screw in a little bit, and it does not seem to be doing it anymore. I'll have a couple more training days to make sure that I've killed that gremlin, but that really concerns me because there is the potential for an accidental discharge, and it really... it's really annoying. It really messes with your groove when you have to lift the bolt and recock every time. So that was the first stage. The second stage is can't get lazy on these barricade shots. So this is a barricade stage. And for this one, the ranges and targets were 50 yards, a 2-inch NRL 22 paper target. So just a regular circular paper target stapled up at 50 yards. The 100 points possible, so that's 10 shots in the X-ring will give you 100 points. The equipment is one bag that is approximately the size of a volleyball or smaller, like a Wee Bad mini fortune cookie. So, you know, this one was kind of interesting. And, of course, we had that same thing on equipment on the previous one. So, one bag that's approximately the size of a volleyball or smaller. Now, while I was looking at this, because, again, I didn't do my preparation. The first time I actually read through the stage was the morning of the match. But while I was there at the match, I actually jumped on Amazon and bought a Wee Bad mini fortune cookie. Because I normally shoot a Reezer Precision Game Changer bag. This is actually a wax canvas pint size Game Changer. And you can tell they are very similar. The pint size Game Changer is a bit heavier than the Wee Bad bag. But they're kind of similar. The Wee Bad has nice curved edges, whereas the Game Changer has more of a flat platform with hard edges. So there are some little differences in the two of them. I will probably do a comparison of the two, a video comparison of them later on. But I thought it was really interesting that now they are calling this out specifically, so I had to go ahead and pick one up so I can see how well this actually works for NRL 22. So one training day on my schedule already with this thing. I'm going to get a couple more in, and then we will talk about it in detail. So for this, the start position is rifle resting on the barrel, mag in, bolt back. The description says shooter will take a position on the barrel and engage the top target with three shots. Shooter will then move to the 5-gallon bucket and engage the second target with two rounds. Shooter will then move to the top of the chair and engage the third target with two rounds. And shooter will then move to the seat of the chair and engage the bottom target with three rounds. So four targets spaced. Each time you move position, you would shoot on a different target. So you move position and you move targets. The barricades were a 50-gallon drum standing on end, a 5-gallon bucket with the opening down, so you were shooting off the bottom of the bucket, and then a folding chair with the seated position facing away from the shooter or towards the target. So this one, there was really nothing out of the ordinary with it. For this stage, I actually used a Coltac tricorn bag with a backbone so I could actually snap it on to the chassis itself and not worry about juggling the bag. That worked very well for both the barrel and for the bucket. Now, when I got to the chair, the tricorn bag, as you notice, has got quite a bit of space in here. This was designed to work on tank traps. It works great on 2x4 barricades, larger barricades, but really narrow barricades like the top of the chair, it does not really work all that well. There's too much forward and back, so you get that teeter-totter action with the rifle. A bag like the Game Changer or the Mini Fortune Cookie would have worked well because when you put the rifle on top of it, it bends these ears in and it grips the actual barricade or the chair back or whatever. So if you have a narrow barricade, something like the Game Changer or the Mini Fortune Cookie really worked better. So that was a failure on my part to select the appropriate gear. There were some guys that really didn't use any kind of bag at all and just dropped the actual rifle itself on the barricades. And for me, the big flub was the Tricorn bag, when it's attached, was too tall with the scope on it for me actually to get the bag and the rifle underneath the chair back and engage from the seat of the chair. So I ended up having to slide the rifle back. I didn't have a time on the clock to undo the bag and jettison it. So I had to slide the rifle back and it put me really out of position and made those last couple of shots very, very unstable. So as a result, I came away from it with 100 points possible. I came away with 56 points. Still had a couple of cocking issues to where I would slam the bolt forward and have it decock, and then I would have to lift the handle and recock it. But at this point, I was aware of that, so I was waiting for it to happen. And sometimes I could actually catch it when I go to close the bolt. I could feel how the bolt closed and know that it decocked on closing. So that was stage two. Moving on to stage three. Stage three was cinder block reloads. And I actually really like this one, although I didn't do the greatest on it. For this one, the ranges and targets at 25 yards, you had a 0.25 and a 0.5 inch on a KYL rack. At 50 yards, you had a 0.75 and a 1 inch on a KYL rack. And at 75 yards, you had a 1.5 on a single hanger. The equipment, again, one bag that is approximately the size of a volleyball or smaller, like a Wee Bad Mini Fortune Cookie. And I'll say real quick, no NRL 22 stage I've seen so far has allowed you more than one bag. You generally have to choose if you're going to run a barricade bag or run a rear pillow or a rear bag or things like that. So you have to choose one bag to run it. And I think it's really cool because it requires you to have a little bit planning ahead. You can't run up there with the carabiner clipped to your back that has 6 million different bags on it and grab whichever one. I think the something like the Pint Size Game Changer or the Mini Fortune Cookie, that is really kind of the Swiss Army knife bag. And I think those work better overall than trying to have a single bag for each. And that's kind of what I saw going through this match, trying to bounce back and forth between the Tricorn bag and the Mini Game Changer. The start position was rifle grounded, standing behind the rifle, mag in, and bolt back. Stage description is shooter will engage the targets in the following order with one shot each. 25 yards, 0.25 and 0.5. 50 yards, 0.75 and 1 inch. 75 yards, 1.5 inch. Shooter will then retrieve their second magazine from the cinder block, approximately 6 feet behind the rifle. Shooter will then engage the targets in the following order after the reload. 75, the 1.5 inch, 50 yards, the 1 inch, and the 0.75 inch, 25 yards, the 0.5, and 0.25. If shooter only has one magazine, they will touch the cinder block with their magazine and finish the stage with that magazine. Now, this was actually a first for NRL 22, at least a first that I'm aware of, where you had to have a magazine change in the stage. I don't recall any previous matches, and I did miss a couple last season. I don't recall any previous courses of fire that required a mag change. And much of that is because tube-fed magazine guns are legal for NRL 22. So if you have an old Marlin or something that has a tubular magazine, it's very difficult to change the magazine, or it's somewhat unsafe to reload that on the clock since you have to load up at the muzzle. So in this instance, they allowed for it because if you did have a non-removable magazine on your gun, you could just move and touch the cinder block and come back. That was kind of the way we looked at it. If you only have one magazine, then you could remove your magazine from the gun, run over, touch the block with your magazine, and then put your magazine back in the gun. So there are options if you have a fixed magazine or if you only have one magazine there at the match. I like this because it forces you to get out of position. It forces you to move. I dislike it because I actually had a malfunction that caused me some issues. I don't know if I improperly loaded my magazine, but I got my first five shots off, kind of rushed them a little bit, but still got them off. Dropped my mag, ran over to the cinder block, which for us is off to the side because of our range constraints. So we put it 6 foot off to the side, grabbed my magazine, come back, dropped in, put the magazine in, went to close the bolt, and the bolt jammed up on the round. So somehow I had jammed that top round. I had to drop the magazine, strip that round out, and put it back in, and then drive on from there. Now, I did load both magazines to 10-round capacity, even though it was only 5 rounds required in each magazine. That way, if I had an issue, I can kick a round out, or if I had a dead round or a bad primer or something, then I can dump the round and then drive on and not be one round down on the course of fire. Nothing on here said that you could only start with 10 rounds loaded. So I went ahead and took the extra. And I also had a magazine in my short action precision, a little elastic magazine holder here on the side of the gun. So if all else failed and I dumped it in the dirt coming back, then I could jettison that one, pull the clean magazine out of here, load it in, and go from there. This one I got 70 hits on. So not too terrible, but I really should have been able to clean it. One of the easy rounds that I lost was my parallax adjustment. I thought I was smarter than I really was, and as I was rushing after that failed reload to try to make some time back, I decided, oh, you know, 25 yards is really, really close. The target's kind of blurry. I'll just aim for the center of the blur and shoot. You can't do that with a 0.25-inch target. You really cannot do that. So I missed, grabbed the parallax adjustment, banged it down to 25, and then got my last hit. But that was a really, really stupid miss. So don't do that. Adjust your parallax. 25 yards, you really have to adjust the parallax because otherwise you really can't see a target at all. So that was the cinder block stage. Next, we moved on to stage 4, which was summertime support side. The ranges and targets for this one is 75 yards, a 1-inch and 2-inch on a double hanger, and a 100-yard 2-inch and 2.5-inch on a double hanger. The equipment, of course, one bag. And the start position is rifle grounded, standing behind the rifle, mag in, bolt back. The description is, shooter will take a support side position and engage the targets with one shot each in the following order. 75 yards, 1.5 and 2 inch, 100 yards, 2 inch and 2.5 inch. Shooter will then transition to strong side and repeat the shooting order. Shooter will then transition to support side and engage the 75 yard, 1.5 and 2 inch with one shot each. Support side means support hand, shoulder, and eye. So this is a prone stage, and you start out on the support side. And support side meant rifle. For me, I'm a right-handed shooter, so rifle on my left side, using my left eye to sight through the scope, and using my left finger to pull the trigger. They have to spell this out because if I'm given the choice, very often I will just move the rifle to the opposite side, use the opposite shoulder and opposite eye, and I will use my strong side trigger finger to run the bolt or to pull the trigger and my strong side hand to run the bolt. That way I'm much quicker doing it that way. When you run true support side, okay, when you shoot left-handed with a right-handed rifle, then you have to play this juggling act with the hand that is providing support in cycling the bolt as well. So if I've got my left hand on the pistol grip, I fire the shot, I have to come up from the support bag, run the bolt, and then come back to the support bag. So it slows you down just a little bit. So they have to put that rule in there because I would do it the other way if I was given the chance. No trick here. So you engage the target support side, you switch over, you engage the same targets from strong side, and then you switch back and engage just the longest targets from support side. The only trick here is to get better at support side shooting. You have to shoot from your support side. You should probably dedicate some time in each training session to shooting the rifle support side. Now, I'm horrible with this. I very often don't practice what I preach, but I'm also fairly comfortable with support side shooting. The thing is, if you don't do it constantly, then you will kind of stumble. When you drop on that support side, your body says, whoa, this feels totally wrong and doesn't want to do anything smoothly. So it's important to shoot support side, but it's also important to shoot mixed support side and strong side so you get used to transitioning back and forth. We've had a couple of stages now in the NRL 22 matches where they require you to switch back and forth between support side and strong side on the clock. So getting that switch down to where you're minimizing movement, minimizing extra things that are going on, extra motion, then that will make it a whole lot quicker and it'll make it more comfortable for you. Additionally, a tip I can give you on it is leave the rifle in place. So when I start out, I sight the rifle in on the target, set the rifle down, stand up behind it. So the rifle's already aligned with the target. I can see the buttstock of the rifle. I can see the way it's lined up. So I have a target to hit with my support side shoulder. I want to drop down straight behind the gun, slide into it, get on that support side, and start banging shots off. When it's time to switch sides, I've already got the gun lined up. It would be stupid for me to pick up and move the gun because now I've got to realign the gun. It's a whole lot easier to take this long thing that is sitting here, put it, leave it in place, already aligned with the targets, and then just slide my body over about 8 inches and then start re-engaging targets. That way I can keep my body lined up with the rifle, I can keep the rifle lined up with the targets, and I just scoot over so that the correct shoulder is behind the rifle. And then again, scoot back when you're ready to go to the opposite side. It saves a ton of time trying to reacquire the targets, especially if you are running higher magnification on your rifle scope. So just a tip there, get used to moving your body behind the rifle instead of trying to move the rifle and then take longer to reacquire the targets. I had 7 hits on this, so 70 points total. Again, not real happy with that performance. Still had some cocking issues, so there were a couple of shots where I had to re-cock the bolt handle. But overall, I do enjoy the support side stages, having to switch back and forth. Usually I enjoy them because they're a stage that I can clean pretty easily, but it wasn't to be had this time around. Then our last stage, stage number 5, and this one is, can you stand this chance? This is an offhand stage. So the ranges and targets are 35 yards, a 3-inch, and a 4-inch on a double hanger, and then a 5-inch at 35 yards on a double hanger. So they were kind of clustered together. The points were, the 3-inch target was 10 points per hit, the 4-inch target was 7 points per hit, the 5-inch target was 5 points per hit, and there were 100 points possible. The equipment is sling only, so you couldn't use anything to support the rifle other than a sling. The start position on this was port arms, mag in, and bolt back. And the description was, shooter announces which target they're going to engage from the standing position and engage that target with 10 rounds. Shooter may change the target any time, but must announce the change. If the shooter is going to engage the same target, announcing is not necessary. So if you're going to stay on the target, you didn't have to say every shot what target you were going to be on. But if you were going to change targets, you had to say it before you changed targets. Now I ran this with a bipod still on here because I balance out the gun with the bipod on here. Did some shooting this morning without the bipod and it didn't really seem to make a difference. So I may ditch the bipod the next time around. It's just easier to keep the kickstand on the gun for when I go to set it down. I did use a Tab Gear PRS sling for this, and this is the first competition where I've used the PRS sling, and I'm not quite comfortable yet with how I set it up. You shoot that a little bit differently than you shoot a loop sling, because you start out in a patrol sling type position, so the rifle is slung cross body, then you bring it up, get your arm underneath, and that tightens the sling down across your arm when you get into position. Still not 100% comfortable with it, but it was better than not having a sling on the gun. But one thing I did notice is my hand position was too far forward. On this chassis system, I need to get my hand underneath the magazine well to get a good tricep against my rib cage to get that bone support. For this, I was a little bit overextended, so I didn't have a good contact between my tricep and my rib cage, and this really fatigued me badly. I could see my wobble area opening up as we went on, and at one point, I had to just go ahead and leave the bolt back and let the rifle come down and rest. But that was only like a minute into my time. I had tons and tons and tons of time. I really ideally could have fired a shot, brought the gun down, taken a breath, brought the gun back up, fired another shot, and done that for every shot through it, and probably would have gotten a couple more hits. But once you get in the groove, you kind of have a tendency to want to stay in that groove and just run the bolt and get your hits. This is one place where a short bolt lift and a short bolt throw is very beneficial because you can just come up with your hand, work that bolt, drop it back down, and fire. It's also a place where semi-automatic rifles can be a great benefit, although sometimes guys tend to rush their shots with the semi-autos. So this one required a little bit of a judgment call from you. So when you got the rifle in position and you started to squeeze, you had to designate when you started which target you were going to be on. So for this, I designated the 3-inch target. When I got up there and looked at the wobble area was on the 3-inch target. So I was confident, I gassed on. But if you got the gun up and you noticed the crosshairs were mostly wobbling off the target, that would be a good time to decide to change to a different target and call out either the 4-inch or the 5-inch target. Definitely get out and practice shooting offhand with a sling. That's the only way to get better with that. Doing dry fire practice time and time and time again will help you to build comfort with the position. You will build the muscles in order to keep those bones locked into that position. And you will get used to the rhythm of breathing. Breathe in, breathe out, trigger press, rifle recoils, you follow through, cycle your bolt, and reset and go through it again. Do not push bad shots. You have a tendency, especially with offhand, to string that breath out way, way, way too long and then push a bad shot in order to give you the chance to breathe again. Not a big deal. 2 minutes on the clock, you have tons of time. So breathe out, breathe in, recycle, get ready to go again, and get that shot off. So no reason to rush shots on this. I got six hits on the 3-inch target. I just stayed on that the whole time. So I came away from that with 60 points. And that was the end of the match overall. I love these matches because they are short. They don't take a lot of time to get through if you don't have a huge group of shooters. For us, it's usually a morning match and then you're done by the afternoon and you can go on and you have the rest of your day to go on with. We did have a larger group, but one of the advantages and kind of one of the drawbacks of the NRL 22 matches is they're easy to set up everywhere. So we did have a group of guys that were coming in from a considerable drive to shoot our 22 matches. And they decided to set up one closer to them so that they didn't have so far to drive. So it's not the greatest because I miss seeing those guys. I miss shooting with them. But I totally understand not wanting to get up at the crack of dawn to drive to come shoot a 22 match. But I'm glad they're still shooting it. I'm glad they set up one near them. Hopefully that will attract more guys that are near them. That is it for this Mail Call Mondays. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the breakdown of the match. I really want to know if you guys enjoy this National Rifle League 22 stuff. I enjoy shooting the matches, but I need to know if you guys enjoy hearing about the matches. If you do, please leave a comment down in the comment section below. If you don't, please tell me that as well. If you guys have questions or comments over anything we've covered on this episode of Mail Call Mondays, you can leave it in the comment section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe, and hit that little bell icon to be notified when we release new videos. If you guys want to know how to support the videos that you know and love, please come check us out on Patreon. We post some behind-the-scenes kind of stuff there, and I really love interacting with you guys there outside of YouTube. Gives us a little bit more freedom. It's a little bit easier for me to see comments and respond and post things that are going on behind the scenes. So we would love to see you over there on Patreon, and that link is down below. And until next time, get out and shoot.